This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be saving money on that power bill, using technology wisely, and living a more sustainable life. Hey, Tim Echols, down on the road on the coast in Darien, Georgia. You've heard me talk about Darien, just north of Brunswick, with my special friends, Timothy and Karina Karsten, sitting in their living room. Let me welcome each of you to the show. Karina, welcome to Energy Matters.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be on your show, Tim.
And Timothy, good to have you.
Great to see you again, Tim. Thanks for coming out to see us.
Hey, we're talking about what we did last year, and we featured a number of interviews on the radio from the Darien Earth Day event that we worked so hard to prepare for. You and I were introduced to each other, Timothy, by Dr. Adam Orford, a UGA law school professor. Let's go back to your meeting, Adam, at Berkeley. Not many Georgia people are that familiar with Berkeley. We definitely think it's a crazy place out there, but is it true? Is it crazy? And how did you meet Orford?
I was actually introduced to Adam Orford by Dan Kamen, who's a professor in the Renewable Energy Lab at Berkeley. And so I was back at Berkeley in the 80s, 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And Berkeley is a wild and crazy place, but it's also an extraordinary university, which is driving innovative ideas. And I studied sustainability way back then. So that gives you a sense of how long the trajectory is. And Berkeley was leading the way back then. So Adam and I met as a result of moving both of us to Georgia.
Yeah, and he's teaching at UGA. Karina, you do a lot of relationship coaching and really working with people. And, you know, as we think about the importance of us getting back together after the pandemic, and, you know, for so long we were sequestered, that really had an impact, didn't it?
Absolutely. It really accentuated the crisis of loneliness. And, you know, one of the places that we actually could take solace and have a relationship is in nature. And so relationship intelligence is about our relationship with everything, you know, and our ecology, our environment, our community is so vital to our health and our well-being.
And Timothy, you've got a lot of nature down here, just a few steps from your home, the marsh. You've got the Darien River, which we can almost see. You've got Sapelo Island. People kayak down here. They get out on the water. I mean, nature does have a kind of a healing effect.
Absolutely. And we have amazing old oak trees and magnolia trees and just tremendous properties all throughout this county. So much of this is undeveloped and is going to stay undeveloped because it's owned by the state and the feds. But as well, people who live here want to live in this remoter. They call this the last wild part of the East Coast. So this is a very special and unique area.
Karina, the front page of the paper this week has an article from Tom Draffin. He's the CEO for the McIntosh County Industrial Development Authority. And I think one of the things that came out of our Earth Day event last year was some increased economic development for the region. I mean, this is becoming more of a tourist hub. We talked about ecotourism last year. I mean, people are coming here because of the water, the marsh, the fish, the shrimp and everything else, right?
Absolutely. And I actually was raised in this area, so I have such a deep connection to this land. You were speaking of Tom Draffin and the IDA. I think that Tom is excellent in terms of wanting to strike that balance, since he is a local. He wants to strike that balance between smart growth and preserving this incredible place that we call home. And that takes extraordinary leadership. And thanks to some of the things that were initiated at Earth Day, it has led to support from the state to help us increase infrastructure to bring smart businesses here.
One of the things, Timothy, that came out is the Partners for Sustainable Macintosh, and it was your vision. In fact, most of what happened because you were involved with it. I came along and lent some assistance to it. But tell me about Partners for Sustainable Macintosh.
Well, we feel that this area is such an important part of the state of Georgia because it's probably the greenest, least developed part of the state. And with our forests here and our waterways and our access to fish and sea life, it's a very important kind of sequestration for the entire state. And so we are committed to protecting that, to supporting the continuation of that. And so Partners came out of our wonderful Earth Day that you were so helpful in us putting together. And what it is, it's basically a collaborative of leaders in the community who are committed to both the environmental sustainability, but also cultural, historical sustainability and economic advancement, the right kind. And because we are the second oldest city in the state of Georgia, our history is vitally important. And because we're also quite a poor county, our economic development and the right kind of economic development is vitally important to sustaining the well-being of this ecosystem.
Karina, Timothy mentioned that this is the second oldest city. I mean, James Oglethorpe never went to Atlanta. He never canoed down the Chattahoochee River. He was in Savannah. He was here, only here for 10 years before he went back to England, never to come back. But James Oglethorpe left a mark in this community. And in fact, we had a chance to plant some trees to commemorate that, didn't we?
It was an extraordinary moment, very moving. So in collaboration with you and Coastal Electric, as well as the Macintosh school system and the middle school, and the former superintendent of our schools, we were able to come together and plant 9 big oak trees and to basically reclaim Oglethorpe Park for the city of Darien. So it's back to its original vision, and this is such a meaningful step. It's a green space now. Before it was covered with asphalt, and now both the school children as well as the community can enjoy that space.
Timothy, this is one of the only schools, high schools I know in the state of Georgia that has solar on it. There's another one in Middle Georgia, but the model they use wasn't quite as effective as what your former superintendent did. I know you guys are awfully proud of that solar array.
Well, actually, Tim, it's on 2 of our schools. It's not on the high school. It's on the middle school and the elementary school. And yes, Jim Poulos, who was our former superintendent, realized that we would save a lot of money by putting solar on our schools. So he ultimately responded to an advertisement, which basically brought in a private equity firm, or basically a green investment group, who agreed to pay for placing the solar arrays on our school roofs. And all we would do is pay a reduced rate. We didn't own it. We don't own it, but we didn't have the funding. We're not a rich county, so we didn't have the funding to actually pay for it ourselves. But we've been able to take quite a reduction and guarantee for future increases in our power costs to have solar on both our middle school and our elementary school.
And certainly if every school did that, it would definitely help us with our energy need right now. Just a couple more minutes left in this segment, talking with Timothy and Karina Karsten here in Darien. Karina, Timothy mentioned historical significance, and I have to mention Sapelo Island and the Geechee community that's there, the solar array that me, along with a number of other solar leaders, put out there at their library. They're very proud of their little library. It's really nothing more than a double-wide mobile home. But we put that pavilion out there. It powers their library. It's net metered. I know that, you know, this is the only Geechee community in the state of Georgia, and I know you guys are proud of that.
I think it's such an important part of our culture here in McIntosh County. It's the soul. You know, it represents the soul and so much of, you know, the African contribution to our culture, not just in McIntosh County, but also the entire United States. And So we are very honored to have the Geechee people here, and Sapelo is such an important part of why people come to McIntosh County and enjoy it.
Timothy, you've recently put solar on this home that I'm in now, and I know something you had wanted to do, and you told me you saw a savings immediately on your bill. I know you're very excited about it.
Yes, of course, there was an upfront cost to achieve that, but we had wanted to put solar on this. Our home is an 1880s home that was originally built as a bed and breakfast here after the burning of Darien. And we had always wanted community solar. We wanted to bring the community together, but it just is a bit complicated at this point in time to be able to do that. So we said, all right, we live in the old part of town, the historic part. We need to demonstrate what's possible here. So we went ahead and put solar on our roof. And in the first month alone, we had $100 savings on our electric bill in this coldest month of the year.
Well, stick around. We're going to have them back to set up an interview I did with Chief Grogan in Norcross about their electric police car. Karina, how can folks find out more about you?
You can visit KarinaKarsten.com, and that's KarinaKarsten.com, and you can send me a note through the contact form.
And Timothy?
You can email me at tdkagroup, that's G-R-O-U-P, at me.com.
Hey, stick around. One more segment coming up with the Karstens. This is Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters. Hey, Tim Eccles here for GEM Car Wraps, G-E-M Car Wraps, this fantastic group out of Brunswick that do wraps on vehicles, jet skis, golf carts. They've got it on my vehicles, so check it out, GEM Car Wraps on Facebook.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Logan Booker, producer of Energy Matters, here for Better Tomorrow Solar. Imagine a world powered by sunlight. Imagine your home powered by sunlight. Better Tomorrow Solar has a passion for helping you see this for yourself. Better Tomorrow Solar can install your solar panels at no upfront cost. Build equity in your own home rather than paying the utility company. Find out more at BetterTomorrowSolar.com. That's BetterTomorrowSolar.com, and see how you can make your world better.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show. We've got an interview with a police chief coming up later in this segment, but Karina, let's talk about this EV parade that we did at Earth Day. There were so many different things that we did during that event, but you all met at Darien Telephone, just one of the great, great businesses in the community, and you drove down to the DNR event, Coast Fest. How was that?
It was extraordinary. We couldn't have asked for a better turnout. I think, how many cars did we
14.
Have? We had 14 cars, and we had a police escort the entire way, which is about 25 miles, which is an extraordinary pathway. So people were so supportive, waving to us, honking horns, and really supporting that it was a acknowledgement of the future, of moving towards a more sustainable form of transportation. And in this case, it was our electric vehicles.
Timothy, any technology requires pioneers to get out there and test it and try it and give feedback. You guys are pioneers, and you know, I think EVs are still kind of at the end of the pioneer phase. I mean, they're growing. Georgia has 100,000. California has more than 1 million. But it was really cool to see y'all drive down there and then be at Coast Fest and get to talk to people about your experience.
Yes, we've had an electric car for over 8 years, and we actually drove our electric car across the United States when we moved to Georgia. So we are proof that, you know, you can have an electric car and drive it long distance. And yes, it is a bit of a change in terms of you have to stop and charge, and it takes a little bit of time, but you can use that time for many different things, including exploring a new area, answering emails or phone calls while on your telephone. You can get out, and we would take out our yoga mat and do exercise and lift weights. So there's always something valuable you can do with that extra time. And yes, indeed, you're right. It is a process of early adopters and continuing to drive that innovation.
Karina, I was in Pasadena recently taking a group of Georgia officials out, and Pasadena is doing so many EV chargers, fast chargers. And one of the things their city leaders told us is, look, we've discovered that you need a place to go to the bathroom. You need a place to get something to eat. You need a security camera. You need internet. You need security lights, and you need a little dog walking area. It's really evolving, isn't it?
It really is. You know, when you go to a charger, that you're going to have a few things ready for you, which is fantastic. And thanks to the leadership of the downtown development and Rusty Quarterman here in Darien, we actually have electric chargers. We also have electric charger at the Oaks Hotel on the river. And so there are places that you can, when you're driving into Darien, you can, if you're an electric vehicle owner, you can use our facilities now.
Well, Timothy, how can folks find out and get in touch with you? And I'll ask Karina the same question.
They can email me at tdkagroup@me.com.
And Karina, how can folks reach you?
You can reach me at my website, karinakarsten.com, KarinnaKarsten.com.
Hey, come to Darien and see what we're all talking about. Stick around right here in this segment. Chief Grogan, Norcross, Mustang Mach-E, and I got to sit in the back of it. How cool is that? It's Tim Eccles. Now join us for our On the Road segment.
We interrupt this episode of Energy Matters to take you outdoors.
On the road again.
Hey, Tim Eccles back on Energy Matters. In the city of Norcross, with Chief Grogan, the police chief here, sitting in his very cool electric police car. You get a lot of good comments on this, Chief?
We do. One of the things we were looking for is to kind of run the various generations of folks that live here in the city, from the youngest kids who love to see the lights and hear the sirens, all the way to the older generations who you want to see that we're being sustainable and we're trying to keep the earth as green as we possibly can. So we're trying different things, not necessarily saying we could ever take our fleet to full electric at this point with the way technology is, but you know, we're trying to move the needle.
Chief, I'm looking at the range on the car. It's 100%, 262 miles. I mean, Norcross, yeah, three zip codes here, but it's not that big a city.
Yeah, 6.2 square miles. The officer who uses this is our community outreach officer. His job is not 100% going calls, doing calls for service or running, you know, traffic enforcement, that type of thing. But he's able to go, generally speaking, 3 or 4 days before he has to put it back on the charger. We try to run it, you know, up to 80% and not go all the way to capacity. This one's about to go out about 30 miles away, so it's charged up, ready to go the full distance to go outside. So we're using this more of a show car, but realistically, it's tough to drive this in a 12-hour shift without having to pause for a recharge at the way patrol cars are driven these days. I mean, it's, you know, you're 250 to 280, and then you're a little heavier on the pedal when you're in law enforcement. So it's we're not quite there yet with the distance that these batteries will get us, but I think it's in the future, this or some other variation of energy efficient fuel.
Well, let's talk about pursuit just a second. A couple of my kids are in law enforcement and have driven various things from, I think my son's favorite was the Dodge Charger. You remember those Crown Vics that had the police interceptor engines. I remember these AMC Javelins that that State Patrol had a couple of. How does this car compare to other pursuit vehicles that you've driven?
Well, that's a great question, and I would actually look at it because we look at everything we have to from safety first. Safety is the most important thing. I think that this car's got sufficient safety features in it. There's always that concern that batteries are still new. What if it were to be involved in an accident, or if we had to use it to actually, stop somebody that had committed a pretty egregious felony, and we had to use it for some sort of a ramming type of thing, and that would be the worst case scenario. But what would happen, right? What would be that scenario? And I drove the old Ford Crown Vics. In fact, my first training car was an LTD that was still sitting around, and so those were like tanks. You could go through walls. The question is, I don't think this is pursuit rated. I think that Ford would probably tell you the same thing. But I do believe, the smaller area that we're in, these 6 square miles, we have a very strict pursuit policy. I think with us, my bigger concern would be the length of the battery, how safe it would be if it were to be involved in a fairly major accident. But then also, charging and keeping these things charged up, so that the officers can stay out on the street and they're not having to come in for 30, 40-minute breaks just to get a good charge.
I'm looking in the back seat here, and this has the plastic seat that you would have if you were arresting someone. You've got a little plexiglass, maybe bulletproof shield, I don't know, that completely separates you, the driver, maybe your partner, from being touched by the person, right?
What this is a split cage because of the smallness of the interior from front to back. There's plenty of room in the left to right, but front to back, there's only so much room for the seat to go back for the driver. So what we had to do is do a split seat, which is pretty common in most patrol cars today, mainly because we don't generally arrest more than one person at a time. It's generally going to be just one person that's having to be transported. This also gives us the opportunity to add in locks here for a shotgun or rifle, be it lethal or less lethal, depending upon how it works out. This car is fully equipped, full camera system. It's set up for synced in for body cameras. It's synced in for a tablet in order for officers to do to get their CAD, you'd be able to do citations and print things. Actually, behind your head there on that seat rest is a holder for a full roll of printer paper. They could do everything they need to out of this particular car. So we wanted to be able to say that we could do it. We could do it with this particular Ford's Mach-E version. It's worked out well, but again, primarily we're using this mostly for community outreach, kind of help bridge that gap between law enforcement and the public, and so far it's served us well.
If you're just joining us, I've got Chief Grogan from Norcross, just a city northeast of Atlanta. I used to live here, actually, Chief, over on Valley Road and on North Barton Street, I think it's called. And my wife and I had our first couple of kids here. You can hear the train in the background. You've got trains that come through here hourly. You just get used to it. But just our final word here, Chief, do you see other departments maybe taking a page from the Norcross book and using electric vehicles somehow in their department, whether it's public relations or community outreach?
Yeah, I do. We've been in a couple of magazines. I've gotten phone calls before from other agencies around the country. The NYPD's Port Authority Police is using them pretty consistently there. Local to us, Duluth has onboarded City of Duluth Police Department has onboarded several EVs. They're actually have a big solar system in their parking lot. They're able to get some solar charging into theirs, but they're using them primarily for administrative functions like command staff or detectives. Duluth is using theirs for detectives. We are considering transitioning our detectives into full EVs in the near future. My code enforcement is all hybrid now, so we're transitioning to that. I think it's the way to go from a sustainability standpoint. I think doing our part to be as green as possible. I know there's an argument for and against batteries being efficient or not, but the reality is, I said it earlier, we've got to move the needle. We need to move this in some direction, and I think that's a good way for us to do our part.
And there you have it, Tim Echols from Norcross with the Chief. Thanks for listening to Energy Matters, and Chief, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
More great talk coming up in just a minute. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters, here with Jeff Pratt of Green Power EMC. Jeff, more and more EMCs are offering solar to their members, and you're seeing it grow like crazy across rural Georgia.
Tim, you're right. Co-ops in Georgia are doing a great job of deploying solar across the state. In fact, they're leaders in the country with respect to engaging customers and deploying large-scale solar to benefit all their members.
Hey, contact your EMC and ask them about their solar energy policy, or just Google Green Power EMC.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Marlin Gas Services, a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities Corporation, is your leader in mobile pipeline solutions for hold, peak, and backup services to meet utilities' demand schedules, and their experts in CNG and RNG transportation and logistics solutions. No pipeline, no problem. Marlin Gas Services can provide uninterrupted natural gas service for short or long-term projects, no matter the location. Learn more about how we can support your mobile natural gas needs at marlingas.com/energymatters. That's marlingas.com/energymatters.
Hello, island friends. Let me tell you about Tim Echols. Mr. Tim loves Georgia and helped keep our rates low. He knows everything about energy and has led by example. I hope you listen to his radio show called Energy Matters. Join me in supporting Tim.
Hey, Tim Echols back on Energy Matters on the road in Doraville at the White Windmill Bakery and Cafe with Daniel Middleton of OXO Consulting. Daniel, welcome to Energy Matters.
Why, thank you, Tim. Glad to be here.
Have you ever been to this Korean bakery here in Doraville?
No, but I'm going to come back again because it was very nice.
Have you ever seen so many pastries in one place?
No, I have not. They look fantastic.
You know, we've got so many Korean businesses coming. Drove past the Hyundai plant yesterday, and it's been a month since I've been down there. I just can't believe how big this site is. And you've been to Seoul quite a bit, you know, throughout your life. Are you surprised that Georgia has become such a mecca for Korean businesses?
Actually, I'm not. There's an affinity for the Southeast, for the Korean community. And I think the way that the state of Georgia has really set the incentives and, you know, the fact that we have a ton of energy is very unusual. Not a lot of states have the capacity that a Georgia does. So I think from an economic development perspective, we're very attractive.
You've done a lot of work in smart cities, smart everything. And when we think about smart meters, smart transformers, what has really enabled this smart technology to become a reality? Is it the fact that there is connected, or is it just the fact that, you know, our hardware has gotten so advanced? What's brought this about?
Yeah, I think there's a recent commercial out there by, I think it's AT&T, that talks about connecting changes everything. And I think it's what you mentioned. The fact that in the past, electric infrastructures at your neighborhood have all been somewhat dumb networks, right? A lot of times people would have to come out to your home and look at it. And you'd have to call and ask for things. And what the big transition about 10 years ago was the digitization of the distribution network, so your neighborhood. Right? So you no longer had to have any of that happen. Everything was in real time. The information was flowing in two directions, back and forth. You could then project that information to a consumer in their home on their laptop so they knew what their refrigerator was using, as an example. And now when you come into EV land, you've got the ability to understand what your electric vehicle is drawing on your home. And if you're so inclined, you can figure out exactly what you paid for your charging on your EV. That'll all come down the road. But the basic building block of this digitization occurred 10 years ago and is still occurring as all of the distribution infrastructure has become digitized and communicating to each other. And then you do the analytics on that, and you can predict outages and the best place to do maintenance and repairs. And when trees fall on lines, you can see the intermittency. So really good intelligence.
So you've worked all over the world. You went to Georgia Tech, and then you were overseas, Australia, you were London, you've been in Nashville, you've worked a lot in Silicon Valley. So the earliest connectivity that I remember are those smart meters, those AMI meters in 2007. But were there connected things before that, or smart things?
In the utility space, not that many that I'm aware of. But this was also the beginning of things like the iPhone and the fact that you went to smart devices. That term smart became popular around 2009. And then that is the way the world started to think, that everything became edge computing now. It was me to you, not me to a central office back to you. So that level of communication became instant and rapid. And then, so we took the same concept into the metering and transmission world, or in distribution world, and allowed all of those devices to talk to each other so that they could share information much quicker, which helped consumers on things like outages.
Do you remember the first app that you ever put onto a phone?
First app I ever put onto a phone? Probably my address book. I'm not sure I do, actually.
Now we've got apps for everything, and we're connected, even down to the garage door level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to your point, I've now connected my thermostat, my doors, my locks, my security system, my garage. To all of that's become that you're seeing a manifestation of what happened at the business-to-business level, which is the infrastructure, the electric grid. Now you're going down to the consumer level, where they're trying to take advantage of the networking communication technologies to do it in their home and to make their lives easier. And that's what really the applications have done, is they've started to communicate with each other, and they've started to make life simpler and you're more aware of what's going on.
I'm talking to Daniel Middleton, and we probably don't have time to talk about everything he's done, because he's done so much. Daniel, I remember when apps started to be used, and I didn't understand what an app was for at the time. I just thought, because people would say there's an app for that, and I didn't really get it, but now I'm addicted to it.
Yeah, I think of an app like the keypad on your telephone. It's how you interface to what you want to experience. And they just put it all in a nice little capture, and they think ahead of you, so it becomes easier and simpler and intuitive. And that's really the value of an app versus going to a website, right? It knows all of your preferences and can operate in that way.
Let's talk about these smart meters, because we've said before on our show that they enable the time of use rate. They enable prepay customers to be able to get turned back on just lickety split. It enables the my home to communicate with the mothership, so the utility, I never even have to call the utility. It seems like customers have been the real winner on this, but the utility gets a lot of convenience too.
Well, they do. I'll give you a statistic that back in the day, I won't mention the utility, but it was in California. There was about 4 or 5 million end customers that they were connecting to. And it had taken them traditionally 30 days to read the metering infrastructure to get a bill going. We could do it in under an hour, all 5 million customers. So it totally changed the dynamic of going to manually do it by month and the inaccuracies that involves to instantaneous. And that really was the big game changer for the utilities' efficiencies, because they could save all that operating cost of doing it much quicker and communicate with their end users in a more proactive fashion. So they became, we used to say, it's no longer 124 Main Street. Now it's Mary Smith at 124 Main Street. You could get a connection to your customer.
And you were telling me at breakfast today that there's even other technologies that can evaluate power lines without anybody having to touch them. And what's that all about?
Yeah, so I think part of the infrastructure, you start with the distribution because that's what touches everybody. And then generation, everybody talks about because nuclear power plants, et cetera, are big and important in the carbon aspects. But the transmission infrastructure is really what links it all together, right? Because the only way to get power to your distribution network from your power plant is through transmission. So the challenge has been for our country now to increase our ability for our grid to produce and deliver electricity where and when it's needed. EVs are a perfect example, all the electrification of transportation. So what that creates is a new kind of demand for power. And if you have it at the generating side, like the state of Georgia has good power, and we have it at the distribution side, now we're talking about optimizing the ability to transmit more power over the same line that you could before. And that's the new technologies. And it used to be that you had to climb up in a bucket truck, put a big CT around a line, all high voltage work, you had to have power outages, everything else. Now the technology has evolved where it's all LIDAR based, right? So you're mounting it on a frame, pointing it at the cable, and you can get all the analytics that you had to go do all the high danger stuff on before. And so this is a new trend that's happening in the electric industry where transmission is becoming a focal point, or more of a focal point. It's been a focal point, but becoming more of a focal point.
As you think about trends moving forward, just a couple more minutes with Daniel Middleton, as you think about trends, and you've worked in, you know, throughout your career, you know, out there in trends, kind of ahead of the curve, what do you see ahead, you know, for utilities and for ratepayers? What's coming down the road?
Well, I think the electrification of transportation is probably the number one thing that's changing in the industry today. So one is a regulatory mandate, but two is the manufacturers creating some really fantastic EV cars like the Leaf we're sitting in here. So I think that trend is going to drive more and more electricity information that is needed. And the second trend is going to be around more at a business-to-business level around reliability of power, smart microgrids, and the ability to integrate solar and batteries into a grid-delivered power is going to make it cleaner. And that's what I think a lot of the trend of the industry now is moving towards: distributed energy and the capability of managing your power as a consumer or as a business consumer, not just from the central headquarters, but you can do it locally.
Just a final quick question, 30 seconds left. You've lived a lot of places. What's the coolest technology out there in the world that you've ever experienced in all the different places that you've lived and traveled to? When it comes to power and communication with customers and that kind of thing?
Wow, great question. So I think, and I know this is related entirely to power, but when I moved to Australia, that culture was very outdoors oriented. And when we ended up spending a lot of time with the Australians, they always wanted to be high tech. It's a very big early adopter community. And so when I ended up doing Power Grid, I did it in Australia, and we ended up deploying 3 million homes in Victoria with these smart infrastructures. So I've seen them adopt technology quicker than most other countries.
Well, thanks so much for being on Energy Matters. How can folks find you out there on the internet?
So I'm dan.middleton at oxocg.com for consulting group. And that's the best way to find me right now. And I'm on LinkedIn under Daniel Middleton.
Great. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Hey, Tim Eccles, one more segment coming up in just a minute. Thanks for listening to Energy Matters. We'll be right back.
As the Southeast's leading non-utility power provider, Cherry Street Energy energizes businesses like Porsche and Gulfstream in cities like Macon and Atlanta with predictably priced emission-free electricity. We build, own, and operate solar power plants for our partners, allowing them to deliver on sustainability promises with no complexities, upfront costs, or ongoing maintenance. All they get is a power bill, simple as sunshine. To learn more, contact us at info@cherrystreetenergy.com.
Tim Eccles of Energy Matters here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over the state. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. Gerd and all the folks at Solar Sun World understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work for you. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll advise you on the best path forward. And Solar Sun World now offers power purchase agreements. Find them at SolarSunWorld.com. SolarSunWorld.com.
Hello, Commissioner. I feel like it's very important that I occasionally let you know that I really appreciate the job that you do and your commitment to solar energy and electric vehicles. It really makes me happy, the idea of our wonderful state having more and more solar. Just, it really excites me. I really love the job you're doing. Anyway, thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Tim Eccles back on Energy Matters. I think this must be an all Berkeley, California episode because I've got another Berkeleyite, maybe they call themselves. We'll find out. Jamie Levin from the Bay Area. Welcome to Energy Matters.
Hey, Tim. Thank you very much for inviting me on your program. Yes, I am from Berkeley. I'm with the Center for Transportation and the Environment. We're a 30-year-old organization, a nonprofit, that pursues the mission of transforming our transportation sector to zero emission.
Well, that's really cool. Where did you go to college out there?
I went to UC Berkeley, graduated with a degree in planning, and then found myself working in transportation. I have 26 years working for public transit agencies, first San Francisco Muni, and then later in the East Bay, AC Transit, where I was the director of environmental technology for 15 years, and I built their first fuel cell bus program, which is now very highly successful.
Yeah, so let's talk about what a fuel cell is. I mean, is a fuel cell kind of like a gas tank?
Well, it's an energy producer, and it produces electrical energy through a chemical reaction, not through combustion. So it needs pure hydrogen in order to make this electric energy, and it draws oxygen from the ambient air, and together it processes that combination to pure electrons, which drive an electric motor. So it's basically an electric motor, but it continually operates as long as there's a supply of hydrogen fuel.
You know, most people don't know that locomotives work kind of like that, right? Explain that.
Well, they're diesel electric. So they use a diesel engine to generate electric power through a genset, which drives electric motors. Here, it's basically similar, except instead of the diesel engine, which has both greenhouse gas emissions and criteria emissions, we use a fuel cell to generate that electricity directly to the electric motors.
We're kind of new with hydrogen in Georgia. We've got down in Camden County near the coast, Plug Power, and they're making hydrogen, and they're actually growing. They built another train, I guess they call it there, not like a freight train, but another line to of electrolyzers to create hydrogen. And I understand that Amazon and BMW are using hydrogen in these forklifts that run around, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the fuel cell forklift market is now commercial. There are some real significant advantages. You can quickly refuel the forklift vehicle with about a kilogram of fuel. It can be done in matters of seconds. So the uptime for that forklift is far better than using other means of energy propulsion, either propane or battery electric, because you don't have to manage batteries. You don't have to utilize propane fuel. Hydrogen has the benefit, in the case you cited, with Plug Power using electrolytic hydrogen, we can actually achieve the ultimate goal, which is green hydrogen, with zero carbon intensity driven by renewable sources. In the case of Plug, they're using solar and wind to generate hydrogen. And what's interesting with fuel cells, they're agnostic to where the hydrogen comes from. So while the more immediate future, the cheapest form of hydrogen is really through reforming methane. But on the other hand, we can evolve to a totally green solution.
You know, I have people tell me that they don't like the idea of battery electric vehicles, especially trucks. They say it makes it too heavy. You lose some of the payload. What truck driver's going to want to stop and charge? You don't have any of that with the hydrogen, do you?
Yeah, you actually touched on some of the key advantages with fuel cell vehicles, especially in the heavy duty sector. One is you get a greater range. We have trucks now that we're deploying in our Oakland Bay Area that operate from the Port of Oakland to up to 500 miles without refueling. Secondly, fuel cells are lighter in weight, so your payload isn't sacrificed. You don't give up 10,000 pounds of payload in order to carry more batteries to have a greater range. Thirdly, I can refuel it within 15 to 20 minutes, so my downtime is very minimal, which is important for operations. And third, the last key point is resiliency. If there's a hurricane or earthquake, seismic problems as we have in California, I don't lose the capability to refuel those vehicles because I can use backup generation to actually get the molecules into the vehicles and operate them.
Think with me maybe 10 or 20 years from now. Do you see kind of a division between like commuter vehicles with people having, you know, hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and battery electric vehicles that are pretty common? I mean, California's pretty much said, I guess by 2030, only new, if you're buying a new car, it has to be battery electric. But in the trucking space, you feel like it's going to move from CNG and LNG, compressed natural gas, over to hydrogen? Is that what it's going to look like 10 to 20 years from now?
I think your prediction or your question about that is spot on. In California, there now are mandates to eliminate internal combustion engines within the heavy-duty vehicle sector and also light-duty, ultimately. By 2045, all trucks operating in California have to be zero emission. By 2040, all transit vehicles, of which there are over 12, 13,000, have to be zero. And there are only two ways to do that, Tim, either with battery electric, and that is an option, or fuel cell electric. We need both of those options in order to arrive at a true zero emission outcome to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions and improve the air quality of our communities by eliminating criteria emissions.
You know, a lot of folks haven't been to California, and certainly maybe they visited a time or two, but, you know, that L.A. area there with that, you know, you've got the beautiful beach, and then as you get inland to the Inland Empire and into San Bernardino in that area, the smog seems to blow in there and just kind of hover, doesn't it? And it's a real problem.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Some of the worst air quality is in the Central Valley of California, which also, by the way, is the breadbasket for America. We produce close to 90% of the country's produce. And that area has really bad pollution. There's also bad pollution around the ports because of all the diesel truck operation in and out of those ports. There are 20,000 trucks operating out of the ports of LA and Long Beach, close to 5,000 out of the ports of Oakland, or the Port of Oakland, and the impact of local communities with that diesel emissions is pretty severe. So we have no choice but to clean up our air in order to improve our community health. That is why California has adopted very strict mandates.
In Georgia, with as rural as our state is, we don't have an appreciation for how difficult life can be. And I've kind of learned this with my daughter living in Anaheim out there and kind of seeing that firsthand. So these transit buses that you're talking about, are these cities like LA and Oakland and San Francisco and all the folks that have these buses, are they really wanting to move to the fuel cell?
It varies from one community to the other. Some of the bigger cities like LA have not yet made a full commitment to that. They're really focused on battery electric, but there are many other transit agencies that have realized who have already deployed battery electric buses that don't have the range capabilities. This is also equally a significant factor in the East Coast where there's cold weather operation. So what we're seeing is a tipping point and a movement towards fuel cell operation where you can replace one-to-one conventional vehicles with fuel cell vehicles.
If you're just joining us, wrapping up our show today with Jamie Levin from CTE. They've got an office in Atlanta, and we had dinner last night and heard all about the history of the organization and how, you know, back during the Olympics here in Georgia, CTE was very involved in getting the tugs that were electric, and in Chattanooga, those little electric circulator buses. So you guys have been involved really all around the country.
We have, and we are extremely engaged in transforming both transit and trucking from conventional technologies to zero-emission battery and fuel cell. And we're seeing the fuel cell applications growing pretty significantly. So our organization, we presently manage over 100 different projects with well over $300 million portfolio. Over our 30-year history, we've managed over $1 billion of projects, again, focused on zero emission.
So you're nonprofit in your tax status, though, right? So you're doing this really as a mission.
Oh, absolutely. That is our mission. We have close to 65 very bright young engineers, planners who are dedicated to this goal is to transform again that transportation sector to zero. That is our mission. That's our goal to achieve that in the very near future. And we're on a good track to do that.
Well, just our last 30 seconds. What do you like about Georgia?
Sure. Well, for one thing, it's a beautiful state. I like the excitement here. There's innovation. There's vision among many of the people. There's a young population that's growing. Georgia has extraordinary potential to be a leader, not just to follow, but to lead.
How can folks find out about CTE?
Go to our website, CTE, for Center for Transportation and the Environment, .tv, as in television.
Great. Thanks so much for being on Energy Matters today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Tim Echols, wrapping up a show with a bunch of Berkeley guys today. Thanks for listening to Energy Matters. I hope you have a great weekend.
Logan Booker here, producer of Energy Matters, and I want to tell you about the Advanced Power Alliance. For more than 20 years now, the Advanced Power Alliance has been leading the energy transition in America's traditional energy states. They advocate for wind energy, solar power, and energy storage, all while partnering with traditional resources to ensure that America has abundant, affordable, cleaner energy to power our homes, our lives, as well as our economy. With the growth of solar and advanced storage and power generation technologies, every state now has the opportunity to be a leading energy state. Advanced Power Alliance is proud to partner with the Georgia Large Scale Solar Association and work with the Public Service Commission, Georgia Power, and their customers as Georgia continues to be one of America's leading renewable energy states. You can learn more about the Advanced Power Alliance at poweralliance.org. That's poweralliance.org.
Having a family member or close friend in crisis is something we have all experienced. North Point Christian Counseling can help. Whether it's marriage counseling or a loved one struggling with abuse or addiction, North Point Christian Counseling has counselors in Macon, Athens, Kennesaw, and Albany to help bring healing and recovery. To find out more, call 478-973-9358 or find them online at northpointcounseling.org. That's 478-973-9358 or northpointcounseling.org.